This is the Doug Marrone Show.
The Doug Marrone Show.
Former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman and J.P. Shadrick discuss the latest Jaguars news with the head coach. The Doug Marrone Show starts right now.
Welcome into the Doug Marrone Show. Week 2 coming up in the National Football League. The Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans. 1 o'clock at Everbank Field. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, head coach Doug Marrone. What's up, coach? Good to see you, man.
Good seeing you.
Congrats on the win last week in Houston. Quite an interesting week after that win. 3 nights for the team in Houston, then the travel back, and then it turns into a relatively normal week after that, I guess, starting on Wednesday. The schedule is fairly normal starting on Wednesday.
I think it's fairly normal if you came back to Jacksonville and you know, your home's in good shape,
yeah,
and
sure,
there's not a lot going on. So, you know, obviously we had some coaches and players that and some radio host,
yeah,
Jeff right here, that, yep, you know, obviously there was a lot going on. So we just wanted to make sure that we did the best job we could for those players and coaches that, you know, didn't have power or needed to clean things up around their house or have insurance claims or things of that nature. So, you know, we're not really into the normalcy of what the week is like, but, you know, we're taking care of our business.
On Sunday after the game, you know, typically after a game, you know, you're traveling back, you can watch. It's crazy how technology is nowadays. Coaches are watching game film on the airplane's return. Because this was so much different, I'm sure that coaches were communicating with their families back home. But what was the schedule like from a coaching standpoint after the game? You return back to the hotel. Okay, let's check on family. Then do you go back to work with the opportunity? Because you almost had kind of like a mini office set up there at the hotel.
We did. It was our operations people did a great job as far as the amount of space that we had in the hotel. It was obviously quite a large hotel. And after the game was over, we knew there'd be a point where we were going to wind up, you know, obviously traveling back here to Jacksonville. And it's a little bit more difficult during that time to actually game plan. Most of the game planning is not from an individual standpoint. You're in there as a group, you know, whether it's the offensive coaches, defensive coaches, or, you know, depending on what you're game planning. So, you know, for us, right after the game was over, you know I came back and I was able to get all 3 phases done, write my notes, get my stuff ready for the meeting the next day, and then, you know, get a jump start on Tennessee because we had our stuff there. So, you know, we pretty much handled it like a late game, except we had, you know, quite a bit of time, and we knew we wanted to get ahead because we knew we were going to lose time, because when we first arrived back in Jacksonville, my thought process is we talk about family, making sure everyone's okay, was, okay, hey, listen, coaches, let's just go back, make sure our homes are okay, everything's fine during the daytime, you know, and give ourselves a couple of hours, and then let's come back here at night and finish up our work, and that's what we did.
Head coach Doug Marrone with us, and then you get back to town, and once that's all done, you see some guys on the day off once the team got back out in the community helping out. A guy like Leonard Fournette goes out. He's been through a scenario like this before when he was a younger kid.
Which is an incredible story, by the way.
It really is, where they stayed on a bridge overnight and were without a lot of things for a long time. To see him come back into the community and help out, give back, that's a great thing to see.
Well, I think you see a lot of that, you know, from not only our players but around the league, you know, that when you get these things that occur and these natural disasters, and, you know, the players, you know, are fortunate and been through, you know, a lot in their lives also, but to have the ability to be able to give back to the community that you live in, I think is extremely important. It's one that, you know, we preach around here, one the organization. Obviously, as an organization, we've done a lot. So I think, you know, it shows that, because the one thing when you're a professional athlete, and Jeff can tell you this, is, you know, you come to a city and it's new, and the city kind of opens their arms up to you and takes you in and treats you like you've been there forever. So, you know, we feel, I know I feel, I can't speak for everyone else, I feel personally like, hey, listen, the more we can do to give back to this great community, you know, let's keep this thing going.
Pretty incredible. You know, I know you've mentioned the first responders, the police and fire department, the job that they did, and coming off a game, you know, where your linemen played so well, the offensive line and defensive line. And, you know, one thing kept popping into my mind was the linemen that are working to restore power across the state and in our city. I'm sitting there going, boy, I see you want to talk about some MVPs out there now. I mean, these guys that are working their tails off to get people power back.
There's no doubt. I mean, you know, people look at, you know, us on Sunday or even during the week in practice and like, ooh, boy, those guys are working hard. And I'm like, we're not working anywhere near, you know, how the first responders are, the people that are out there in the difficult weather or, you know, trudging through the streets that with you know, that are filled or flooded, you know, the families that don't have power. That's the one that really gets me, you know. I mean, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of danger out there that you know, people just kind of just forget about. You know, a power line goes down, you have water around you. There's just so many things that go on, and there's so much hard work, so much planning. I can't say enough about, you know, the mayor and everyone, the way they've handled this, haven't gone through this before. So I really think that there's a lot of thanks to go out to a lot of people.
Well, Lenny Curry and his crew have done a great job, the mayor of Jacksonville. And by the way, did you see Lenny sporting the Jaguars cap on all his TV stuff?
Well, I did, and then I saw Mark had to give him a 2017 cap.
Yeah,
I was like,
the old one.
I started saying, I'm like, golly, I mean, how do we not give the mayor a 2017, you know, Jaguar cap?
He's got one now for sure. The Jaguars Foundation and Shad Khan donated $1 million to the First Coast Relief Fund and 5,000 tickets to this game on Sunday to first responders and people in the Jacksonville area affected by Hurricane Irma. What's the scene going to be like on Sunday here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, again, my focus is what's going on, you know, between the lines. I'm not very good. You know, people say, well, hey, did you hear the crowd or did you hear this or did you see that? And I'm like, no. I'm just, you know, I'm just not, because I think my responsibility, what everyone's counting on me on, is to make sure I, you know, I do a good job getting this team ready, do a good job of, you know, coaching, you know, through the game. And I think that's where my focus is. And I think the better job I can do between the lines and coaching, I think obviously the better it is for everybody else.
Well, you know, the home opener, it's always a big moment for every community. And, you know, coming off of a win, it's going to add even more excitement to it. You know, going back to even Little League days, well, or high school days, I guess, because that's really the first experience that you really had with road games and home games. And it's always been preached to me as a football player and in the game of football and really sports in general, winning at home is so important. How much have you talked about that with your team, and is that a very strong point of emphasis with your coaching style?
Well, we've talked about it quite a bit. I don't know, you know, percentage wise how much we've talked about it, but you know, we haven't played well at home or on the road. We really haven't. So, you know, for me, you know, I think it starts with, hey, making sure that, you know, obviously we started on the road. We talked about playing on the road. But I've addressed to the team, listen, we've got to become a good home football team. And I don't look at it as far as that we need the help from our fans or things of that nature. I think that stuff comes when you start playing well at home. I think. That's the thing you have to do first. If you can play well at home, put a good product out there and start winning, then I think now all of a sudden the home field advantage starts to grow. I don't think you have home field advantage grow and you're not winning football games. That doesn't happen. So, you know, I try to explain to our players that, you know, if we envision the type of atmosphere we want, we're the ones that are going to have to get it done on the field first.
Let's come back and we'll get into Mike Mularkey's football team, the Tennessee Titans, our good friend, the exotic smash mouth offense.
You love that term.
Of the Titans.
I've never heard that before.
Well, we'll explain.
JP's favorite term to say.
When we return, we'll explain in just a moment. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
JP Shattuck, Jeff Loggeman, head coach Doug Marone. The Doug Marone Show continues. The Jags and the Titans coming up Sunday at Everbank Field. Split the season series last year. Two totally different ball games last year. The Thursday night struggle down in up in Nashville early in the season. And then late in the year, knocked the Titans out of the playoff run towards the end of the season and knocked Mariota out with a broken leg. It was an eventful game in December last year. New season now. This is a Titans team, coach, that lost last week. They didn't get that run game going. They like to – Mike Mularkey, we all know him well here, loves to run the football, loves to throw some tight ends in there. They threw the ball 41 times last week with Mariota. Couldn't get a run game established, and you have to think that's going to come back this week. Or going to try to, at least.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we have to be ready for everything. So, you know, I don't know what their, you know, plans are or what they're trying to do. So, obviously, you know, I'm more concerned about how we're going to play the game and what we have to do. But I will say this. I think that, you know, when you look at Tennessee and you look at their offense, defense, and special teams, they're probably one of the more complete teams that you see in the NFL. I think they've done a good job in the offseason adding to their special teams play. They have a couple players there that are going to be a great challenge for us. Obviously, you've mentioned offensively, you know, with them running the football, I think that, you know, they have two obviously big, strong backs that, you know, can take it to the house at any time. They have a big, strong offensive line. I think they've upgraded themselves in the draft, you know, with the receiver. I think that helps them. And obviously, we know Delanie Walker has been a great player for a long period of time. And then, you know, defensively, it's tough. You're going against, you know, arguably probably maybe the best defensive coordinator that's ever you know, coached in this game, and I mean that, and I haven't gone against him so many times. So, you know, it's going to be a great challenge for our team. You know, we've had some good practices. Obviously, we've got to keep improving on that, and then we have to make sure that we go out there and perform very well on Sunday.
I think one of the surprising things for me, you know, with Marcus Mariota coming back, you know, broken leg here last year, you know, watched him in the preseason, and then you watch him in the first game, and there's no hesitation to call plays that utilize his mobility, whether it be design runs, whether it be getting him out of the pocket. And it looks like he has no ill effects from the leg from last year whatsoever.
No, I mean, I haven't seen, you know, not that, I mean, I wouldn't really look at that, you know, to see, you know, I'm looking at a quarterback and how he plays the position, you know, how he's in the pocket. Does he get spooked? Does he hang in there? You know, can he extend plays with his legs? You know, what they're looking to do running wise, where he's throwing the football, what he's seeing, what his accuracy is. And I think, you know, a player like Marcus has shown that he can do all those things. I mean, he can hang in the pocket and with a rush coming right at him and deliver a football. He can extend plays and run out of that pocket, which is always a challenge, you know, for the defensive line. He can, you know, and he can run with the football in his own read. I mean, you know, we've seen it, you know, firsthand, you know, him being able to take it 80-something yards. So, you know, he's an excellent quarterback, you know, probably one of the top young quarterbacks in this league. And I think it gives us a challenge on a lot of different fronts. Our defensive line, making sure, you know, that we contain him in the pocket. And then if you contain him in the pocket, he's a quarterback that, you know, can complete, you know, 70% of his balls.
You mentioned Corey Davis, which is their first of two first-round picks that they had in this past draft. Phenomenal football player, had, you know, very, very good success in his first game. I think he had six catches for almost 70 yards, somewhere in that range. But he's got some size to him. And he didn't have a lot of exposure during the preseason because he was dealing with some injuries. But, you know, for the first game out, watching a rookie wide receiver, he was impressive, and this week, you know, you've got two corners on the injury report. You know, according to today's injury report, they didn't practice. Is that a concern, or is that something that, you know, hey, look, you know, our two corners, you know, we feel confident, you know, about them being able to play?
Yeah, I think the reason why I'm smiling is because I get this question in the press conferences all the time. They're like, you know, so-and-so didn't practice today. Is that a concern? Yeah. Anytime someone's not practicing or anytime someone's not performing well, You know, it's a concern. And to sit here and say, you know, we're not worried, this and that. I mean, we put a lot of emphasis on practice. There's no doubt about it. And that's the one thing that we're trying to improve upon as a team. Because my belief is, you know, the practice, we try to make it as difficult as it possibly can. And if you don't practice well, you're not going to play well. I'm a firm believer in that. And then, you know, that's the one thing I do know. Now, I have seen, you know, I've been on teams where we practice well and haven't played well, but I haven't been on a team yet that hasn't practiced well and played well on Sunday. You know, so that's a big thing for me. So anytime we have players that are missing or not performing well in practice, I do get a concern.
Let's come back. One final segment with the head coach. Doug, we'll talk your offense, especially the offensive line against this Titans front.
Okay.
After a good week last week for this Jaguars offensive line. See if they can make it two in a row to start the season. This is the Doug Marone Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
Game day is so much more enjoyable if you don't have to worry about finding a parking space. Ride the JTA Game Day Express and park in one of their five convenient lots. Tickets start at just $8. Welcome back to the Doug Marone Show. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, and head coach Doug Marone. It was said when you guys were introduced in January that football is made to be played in the trenches. That's what Tom Coughlin said. Win the line of scrimmage. That's how football is made to be played, and that's the way it was played last week for this Jaguars team, coach, especially on the offensive line, a group that had a lot of focus and attention on it in the preseason. The guard positions were changing. You had a rookie left tackle coming in. The right tackle's banged up off and on, in and out of practice. They come out week one and thoroughly dominate the Houston Texans.
Well, I mean, they played well. Dominate's a tough word for me, you know, in the NFL. But, again, I think it's something that obviously they were able to do that last week, which is fine. And I want to make sure that, you know, they get the credit, which where the credit's due for that. Yeah. But I think it also shows us that, you know, there's a level of expectation now. And I think that, you know, they're going to have to go out there every week and prove that. And, you know, to be a good offensive line in this league, you know, it's not eight good games, eight bad games. You know, it's 16 good games. So, you know, right now there's one, but that's in the past. You know, there's going to be different challenges each week, and, you know, they'll be challenged this week by a very good front seven.
I think the thing that impressed me the most was, you know, when you look at an offensive line, you can look at the individual performances and say, okay, well, he played well against this guy and he played well against that guy. But in certain, you know, whether it be protections or run blocking, it was almost the synchronization of the unit as a whole, I thought, was very fluid.
I did. I thought they did a good job. We got a lot of questions, you know, because just like JP said, you know, we were trying to find the best five. So, you know, we were switching some people in and out and things of that nature. And I thought that the communication over, you know, for the most part went very well, which I think is important. And I think, you know, we've got to continue to keep doing a good job of mixing the schemes and mixing things up to, you know, not let people get a true beat on us.
Yeah, the other thing that really stood out to me was watching Leonard Fournette run the ball. And there was one play, and I showed it on a film room piece earlier this week. And he's following Tommy Bohannon. And it was on the drive to where you guys answered after the Texans scored right at the beginning of the second half. And it's a lead play.
Mm-hmm.
And there doesn't appear to be a hole, but he stays committed to where the play is designed to run. And as he goes through, it's maybe a foot wide. Somehow he gets through there, and it kind of opens up as he goes through it. But the confidence and the belief in a young running back to go where he's supposed to go and with pad level down was very impressive in my mind.
Well, I think the thing I was most impressed with, and obviously he didn't play a lot of snaps, obviously, in the preseason. So, you know, you're banking on the things that you saw during training camp, practices, and the way he played in college. And you never really know that first game because a lot of times you'll see people kind of peak up and their pads will raise up. But I was very impressed of running with a low pad level. So that was maintained. I thought he did a very good job of that. And then obviously the big thing that, you know, you talk to backs quite a bit about is, hey, trust the scheme, know the blocking scheme. Because in the NFL, sometimes that hole, when you first receive that ball is not there, and sometimes you just got to trust the scheme at, you know, where it's going to open. So I thought he did a very good job of that. I thought Chris Ivory, you know, ran the same type of way. You know, I thought he ran extremely hard. I think, you know, when you're looking at yards after contact, that's a big thing, and guys falling forward, you know, rather than getting knocked back. So, you know, I was very pleased with the way they both of our running backs ran the football.
Dick LeBeau has been in the National Football League for 59 years as a player and a coach. He's in the Hall of Fame as a player. You've been a line coach in this league, an offensive coordinator in the league, a head coach. Do you remember your first meeting facing a Dick LeBeau defense?
I do. I mean, we were at the New York Jets the first time we played in a snow game, which was unbelievable. We only had I think like two shovels at the stadium, which I think they actually changed the rule, you know, of what you have to have. So I don't really count that game. So let's take that game out. And then, you know, I remember the playoff games, you know, playing Pittsburgh in the playoff games when I was in New York and going up there and real. I mean, you talk about long nights now trying to figure out who's coming. You know, obviously Troy Polamalu was there, and, you know, sometimes he was a safety, sometimes he was a dime linebacker, and you never really knew, you know, how to identify him. And I think that's where Coach LeBeau is one of the best ever, probably in the league, of breaking down protections and running different packages and things of that nature. I also remember being in New Orleans and saying to ourselves, hey, listen, you know, we're not going to be able to run the football on this team. And we wound up running it 7 or 8 times and throwing it, you know, pretty much all day. And, you know, we had 500 yards of offense, which is unheard of, you know, on coach. But, you know, at the end of the day, the result was we lost the game. And I think that's where, you know, they do such a good job of trying to make you change or make you one-dimensional or doing those types of things. So I have the utmost respect for him. Like Jeff and I were talking about it early in the day, I think he might be, you know, if not the one of the best ever, you know, to coach this game at defensive coordinator.
In his scheme, because, you know, it's that 3-4, do a lot of blitzing, linebackers are so important. And they've got three very talented outside guys. They added Eric Walden from the Colts, who was a double-digit sack guy for the Colts. And all of a sudden, how they got him, it's kind of surprising. But Arakpo, Walden, and also Derek Morgan, I mean, these are three really good football players that can bring it from the edge or from a stand-up inside rush position.
Yeah, I mean, they can do it from, you know, standing up, the edge. They move those guys around quite a bit. You know, they're veteran guys. They have good moves. They're in sync. They're, you know, running games together, you know, trying to do things to get you off level. So, like I said, they're good rushers, you know, and you can't lose sight. You know, we keep mentioning, you know, the outside and the speed, but, you know, really probably one of the better defensive linemen in the league is, you know, Jarrell Casey, who's, you know, obviously an outstanding football player, you know, from the inside. So now you have those three pass rushes and add him into the mix, who's an outstanding pass rusher. And, you know, you got to challenge it. And the same thing with them. It's pressure, you know, who's coming, who's not. You know, who you're identifying, what you're doing. It puts a lot of challenges on not just the offensive line, but also the quarterback and the running back.
Coach, we're looking forward to the home opener this Sunday. I know you have a lot of work ahead of you in the next couple of days, but we appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, JP. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Doug. It is Doug Marone, Jaguars head coach, joining us. We'll get into a couple of receivers going under the knife this week when we return. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
Hurricanes Harvey and Irma have impacted millions of people. The entire NFL family, including players, teams, and fans, is committed to support the relief efforts. And we invite fans across the country to rally behind those who have been and continue to be affected by the storms. Visit redcross.org/NFL or text Red Cross to 90999 and donate $10 to American Red Cross Hurricane Relief. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, head coach Doug Marone with us earlier. The Doug Marone Show continues. A couple of surgeries this week for Jaguars wide receivers. Allen Robinson, ACL repair. It was successful. D.D. Westbrook, core muscle surgery. It was successful as well. That's not what you want to hear after week one on an injury report.
Well, no. I mean, look, D.D. Westbrook, the encouraging thing is that he can come back, you know, at some point during the season. I can't remember exactly what it is. I think they can start practicing 6 weeks.
Right, a couple weeks.
And then come back you know, after that.
There's a window.
So, I mean, that's good. You know, the disappointing thing for, you know, for the individual was Allen Robinson. I mean, the guy has worked incredibly hard. He practiced incredibly hard. He had a great camp. I think he was poised for a very big year. Whatever opportunities he had, he was going to make the most of it. And for him to make a catch, and really, there was really no contact involved, you know, with that, which a lot of times that's what you see with an ACL. I mean, remember Derek Marks?
Yeah.
You know, on the goal line, just kind of plants his foot, and then the knee just kind of twists in a funny way, and it was the same thing with Allen Robinson. You know, he's making a catch, he's going out of bounds, he gets pushed a little bit, and then something just doesn't, you know, work right with the knee, and then there goes the ACL. And look, I don't want to say that it's a good thing because it never is, but, you know, the possibility of being back at the beginning of next year with no limitations is very, very strong.
Contract year for him, too.
Yeah.
On a personal note.
You know, hey, look, you know, it's I think all those things will take care of themselves. I mean, he's a proven good player. You know, you go back what, 15 years ago, 20 years ago in the National Football League, and an ACL was considered, you know, a question mark. You know, can a guy come back and be himself after an ACL surgery?
That's right.
And nowadays, you know, an ACL is not even, you know, a consideration of whether the player can come back. But there's certainly going to be a different pay scale for a guy who didn't play the last year. I mean, that's just the reality. Last year wasn't a great year for A-Rob because it wasn't a great year for the quarterback. You know, so you go back 2 years ago and Allen Robinson was simply fantastic. So it's disappointing that he didn't have that opportunity to be able to show how good he can be in a contract year. But that's life as a player. I mean, injuries happen, and that's the unfortunate side of the game.
So with these two receivers down for a bit, at least in Didi's interest there, he's out for a number of weeks, Allen Robinson out for the year, that creates opportunities for other guys. Marquise Lee has to step in now and step up to the role he was in last year, towards the end of last season, playing at a very high level. Allen Hurns, a guy who a lot of people around here felt might have been, was he even on the team camp?
I was kind of questioning that during training camp. Would he make it?
He darn sure is now, and he's got a big role in this football team. And Keelan Cole, a rookie who's coming in as well, undrafted guy. I mean, those guys have to step up and play.
Well, and, you know, in my mind, you know, the first game out, you know, Marquise sustained the ankle injury in practice in the preseason there, wasn't available at the end of the preseason. And, you know, he was back handling kickoff return duties, the punt return duties and all of that. But, you know, he really didn't do anything in the game. I mean, he didn't have a catch, you know, as a receiver in the ball game.
Yeah.
That's not really kind of what we were expecting out of Marquise Lee. But, you know, there weren't a lot of opportunities to go around either. So you kind of understand that that side of it. But I expect, you know, Marquise Lee to be the Z, which is, you know, the wide receiver typically that's off the line of scrimmage. Allen Robinson played the X position. So what will they do, you know, because in the past, Allen Hurns has been the Z, the starting Z. So will Marquise Lee now go to the X, which was Allen Robinson's spot? You know, I don't know the answer to that. That's going to be kind of a interesting thing as far as what they decide to do from a coaching standpoint. And, you know, look, Keelan Cole has got to be able to step up, and he's got to be able to step up in a big way. And I don't want to say this and have people take it the wrong way, but I think the way that this team is going to play football, you know, they're going to run the ball, control the clock, pick and choose where they want to throw the ball. This is a big blow because he's a great football player.
Yes.
But this is not a huge blow because I think of the style of offense that they play.
And the scheme that they're trying to
get. And look, it's anytime you're missing great players, it's hard to be at your best. And so it's going to be difficult for them to be as good as they possibly could have been without them. But I think that they can survive, and I think they will survive.
Where it could hurt them, though, is you don't have to defend Allen Robinson anymore on the outside and worry about him, so you might can bring an extra guy down closer to the line of scrimmage in the box. Right?
Well, I think teams are going to do that anyway. You know, and so
no matter if he's out there.
Yeah, I don't
or
think
not.
That changes. I mean, you know, and I think what here's the reality. If you had Julio Jones or A.J. Green in this offense with Blake Bortles, Until it's proven that they can beat you with the pass and Blake Bortles can be, you know, a threat with somebody, whoever that may be, they're going to keep that extra guy down in the box anyway.
Got it.
You know, that's one of those things where it's not a matter of personnel, it's a matter of proving it. And so they've got to be able to prove it right now, you know, with the way they're running with Leonard Fournette, Chris Ivory. You know, if I'm Dick LeBeau, I'm playing eight in the box every time. Unless it's second and 9 or 3rd and, you know, 3rd and 6, if it's 3rd and
whatever
4,
it is.
Yeah, you play the extra guy in the box. And it doesn't mean 8 in the box. It could be 7 if you're, you know, if they're in 3 wide receiver sets. So, you know, coordinators are going to play them like that no matter what, regardless. Until they prove that they are a dynamic passing team, which they haven't shown that yet, they will see the extra defender in the box to stop the run.
And they didn't have to show that last week much. I mean, they ran the ball 26 times with Fournette.
Well, and I think part of that was due to the Texans. You know, the Texans, you know, you got Tom Savage at quarterback. You've got questions with their offensive line. We talked about that with Kendall Lamb at left tackle and Dwayne Brown being a holdout. That, you know, right tackle, Breno Giacomini. Chris Clark, who was moved to be a backup, and he played a little bit in the game. I don't know if he's hurt or not, but he played a little bit in the game. Then they pulled him back out and put Kendall Lamb back in at left tackle, and everybody was fighting to go rush over to the left tackle,
right,
which is the way it is. I mean, look, if somebody's not up to speed, you need to make sure they're not up to speed for the whole game. So, you know, with those question marks with the Texans, with an unproven quarterback and an offensive line that, you know, had some questions, you know, as an offense, you're going to play it close to the vest. You're going to be happy to punt in a lot of situations and play good defense, and that's what they did.
Let's come back and look into the history books here a little bit. See maybe some of the last times the Jags were at this point early in the season. It's been a little bit.
It's been a while, and it's been a long while since they've been
2-0. Yes, we'll break into that. We'll delve into it, if you will, in a moment. This is the Doug Marone Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, the Doug Marone Show continues. The head coach was with us earlier tonight. The Jags and the Titans coming up Sunday, the home opener, week two in the National Football League. The last time, Logs, the Jags were 1-0 was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
What was the last time they were 2-0? Top of your head?
I saw this the other day, so it's really not off the top of my head. 2006, I believe. It's been a while.
Long, long time. It's the year before the last playoff run of 07.
You know, and the important thing is, look, if you can get to 2-0, you've done it by doing it in the division.
That's even better. It's like 4-0.
Which is big time.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it would be a huge boost to this football team. And then, you know, the next team up would be, you know, the Baltimore Ravens over in London. That's an important AFC game because it's a conference game. It's not a division game, but a conference game. But, I mean, that's – look, I mean, this AFC South division is wide open.
Oh, yeah.
It is wide open, and I thought it was going to be wide open at the beginning of the year because of – you know, look, we always say that it's a quarterback game, and it's a quarterback business. And with the injury that Andrew Luck is dealing with and has not played yet and is not anticipated to play this week, and the question mark is when will he play?
And will he play? If they're 0-7, do you even risk throwing him back out there?
Well, and there, you know, look, there's there's not a real – I mean, Mariota is probably the most established quarterback. Blake Bortles, I mean, you could say that, look, 2 years ago he was, you know, in a conversation. So, I mean, the division is open. It's always open at this time of year, unless you're in the division with the New England Patriots. I don't care if they're 0-1 or not, you know. But the reality is that look, this is a great opportunity for this football team.
Yep.
The Tennessee Titans have a good football team. They're solid. They have solid coaching. They have solid players. They have veteran players. They have veteran coaches. But look, I mean, this team last year in a December game with really nothing to play for, with an interim head coach, came out and beat the dog out of the Tennessee Titans right here at Everbank Field. And that game was not close. Mm-mm. It was not close. I mean, the Jaguars were pulling away at the end of that ball game. So, you know, it's a great opportunity. And Mike Mularkey coming back, you know, I'd love to hand him a loss again here at Everbank Field. Be nothing better.
I think a lot of people would.
Sure.
They always do.
You know, and I think it's going to be great atmosphere. You know, I talked to a lot of people this week, upon returning from Houston, and there was a lot of people that were so fired up about the Jaguars game that they saw on Sunday. And a lot of them talked about, look, that, you know, that with what was coming with Hurricane Irma, to be able to have that 3-hour distraction, you know, they were like, this is great.
Right before the power went out.
Yeah, and then the power goes out, you know, at 6:30 or 7 right. o'clock, you know. But, you know, look, I mean, that's the great thing about sport. You know, it kind of carries you away and carries you away from your thoughts at the moment, maybe any difficulties that you have. And so hopefully this Sunday can be a very similar opportunity, but an opportunity for people to see it in person.
Yeah, let off some steam after a tough
week. Yeah, because you know what, JP, we can all say here, you know, I mean, did anybody think that this team would play to that level in Houston? Did anybody think that the offensive line would hold J.J. Watt and Merciless and Clowney without a sack?
They had seven tackles combined.
And without being a factor in the game.
They didn't do anything.
I mean, nobody thought that. And if anybody tells you that was going to happen, they're living a pipe dream. I mean, that's, you know, it's not happening.
I mean, you did pick them to win.
Well, I picked them to win, yeah, but I didn't expect them to win in that fashion, which is great. I mean, it was awesome.
It was a physically dominating. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle said on Monday that five Texans were in the concussion protocol that day,
and Miles Jack caused a couple of them. Miles Jack was he was the one who delivered a huge blow to C.J. Fedorowicz. He also took out the other tight end right before the half. Ryan Davis, I believe his name, but not Ryan Davis, Ryan Griffin, the other tight end, the backup tight end. He took him out with a shot right before the end of the half. I'm not sure how the third team tight end ended up getting a concussion, but Miles Jack was fantastic in that game. 14 tackles, you know, and heck, he ended up keeping Paul Posluszny on the sideline because he was taking tight end after tight end out. And so the Texans had no other decision to make but then to play three wide receiver sets and the Jaguars matching up in nickel defense, which keeps Paul Posluszny off the field in that situation. So, you know, a great job by him. You know, and the guys up front, I mean, just tremendous. Calais Campbell, from the very first part of that game, he was unstoppable. All the way from the beginning to the end. If he wasn't getting a sack, which he had four of them, he was impacting every play, pushing the pocket, throwing guys around. He's just such a dominant force. You know, and it's very rare, JP, that you see at the NFL level, you know, the old catchphrase, man among boys.
That's right.
You just don't see that much.
Because they're all men.
Because everybody's a man in the National Football League. But there's something different about Calais. You know, 6'8", 300 pounds, smart, can move, and you put all that together. I mean, he was unstoppable, and what a joy to watch. You know, what a joy to watch. And how in the world can the Arizona Cardinals allow a player like that to walk away? I don't know.
They want to pay the number, I guess.
About the money.
Good for the Jags.
Very good for the Jaguars.
Let's come back and get into the series history of Jags Titans, especially the recent series history. And why not? We'll talk a little more defensive line from last week. That got you smiling,
That there's a lot to smile about after that game.
This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marone Show continues right now.
Tickets available Sunday season, or the home opener, rather. Jags open Everbank Field for the regular season against the Titans, 633-2000, or visit jaguars.com/tickets. If you've been affected by Hurricane Irma, you can register for those donated tickets, jaguars.com/jacksas1. And your request will be seen by folks here in the office, and they'll get to you. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, the Doug Marone Show continues. We're getting on the sack train here right before the break. And why not talk about it more? It is there have only been, from last check we had there, five 12-sack games in league history, which is the record. And then I think 20 11-sack games. So a 10-sack game is – those are very rare. A 10-sack game is very rare.
Yeah, I've never seen one.
You've never been in one, obviously.
No. I feel like I didn't have that ability to help get it to 10. But, you know, impressive. And look, if there was ever a right opportunity, it was against the Houston Texans in the situation with their offensive line. Like I said earlier, you know, them not having Dwayne Brown at left tackle, you know, he's holding out. I think he was scheduled to make something around $8 or $9 million this year, and he wants more.
He better dig in more now.
And, you know, the surprising part is that, you know, after that game, most fans would have thought, okay, the Texans are on the phone with Dwayne Brown and going to make him
short week. They're playing tonight.
You know, come in and have a new contract for him and everything, and nothing, man. Crickets. And I'm sure there's a lot of Texans fans that don't understand that. And I get it. I mean, Dwayne Brown's their best offensive lineman. He has been for a number of years, and he's got 2 years left on his contract, and the team doesn't want to change it. You know, you're not talking about Brandon Albert, you know. I mean, Dwayne Brown is a really – and Brandon Albert has been a very good football player. But Dwayne Brown is a high-level player, still at the top of his game, and an important part of what they have going on there in Houston, and so surprising there. But, look, this week, it's not going to be easier than the Houston Texans. You know, Doug talked about, you know, their offensive line. Their two tackles are top picks, former first-round picks. You could say, you know, Taylor Lewan is the left tackle. Conklin's the right tackle. Conklin was a eighth overall pick in the draft last year. I think Taylor Lewan was like an 11th overall pick a few years back. Some make the argument, and Buscelli, you know, kind of beats that drum a little bit, that Conklin is better than Taylor Lewan. But they're both really good. Probably the best tackle tandem in the league today. On the inside, they've got former Houston Texan at center Ben Jones, Quentin Spain at left guard, Josh Klein at right guard, who's a former New England Patriots. Obviously, there's a connection there because John Robinson, the general manager and executive vice president, that's what his title is now. He got a bump, by the way, from last year. Spent some time in New England. I'm sure he was very familiar with Josh Klein. So, but in the middle, they're solid. But at the tackle positions, they're really good. Really good. So it's going to be a great challenge. Dante Fowler, Yannick Ngakoue, Calais Campbell, when he does rush from the outside. I'm looking forward to seeing Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell when they get the opportunity against the inside guys. I think that they can make some things happen there. And that's, you know, going back to the last game and how good Calais was, he makes it so much easier for a defensive end because the quarterback can't step up. And it makes a wider corner available to a pass rusher. So think about it. If you're a pass rusher, and let's say the quarterback, his back foot is at 7.5 yards. If he won't step up to 5 yards, it's easier for a defensive end to get the corner. If the defensive end has to get to a back foot that's at 5 yards after going up the field, that's very difficult. And that's what Calais Campbell and also Malik Jackson have been able to do, is to make the job easier for Dante Fowler and Yannick Ngakoue, not taking anything away from what they did as individuals.
Against a guy like Mariota, what extra things you have to do as a pass rusher to make sure he doesn't get away from you?
Well, you got to have lane awareness as a pass rusher. You know, the offense that they run, they try to incorporate and have incorporated a lot of the things that they did at Oregon that Mariota was comfortable with. You know, the read option pass, the read option run game, the naked read option where he keeps it, et cetera. So he's very good at that. They're not afraid to expose him as a runner. They're expecting him to be smart, and for the most part, he is. And that's the style that he plays, you know, and it makes it difficult on a defense because typically on a read option, you are, you know, because if you have, for example, Tom Brady's not going to run the ball. So you don't want to count for him as being a runner. So in essence, with a true threat running the read option at the NFL level, you're taking away one run defender away from the box for the actual running back because you have to honor the quarterback. And look, teams in the past that have run the read option look, they don't pay attention to the quarterback because he's not a legitimate threat. Mariota is a legitimate threat.
We've seen it. 2015, he had an 87-yard touchdown run against this football team.
Well, that and like last week, he had 3 carries for 26 yards, and one of them was a touchdown.
I mean, he was the only rushing touchdown of the game.
He was an effective player in that game. If they had been able to keep the score a little close and been able to convert some third downs, he would have been more of a factor as a runner.
Recent series history. When we return, also the week's schedule ahead of this Week 2 matchup. The Jags and the Titans coming up Sunday. This is the Doug Marrone Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Doug Marrone Show continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Logman, the Doug Marrone Show continues. And for those in our flagship station in Jacksonville, 1010 XL, stick around. Jaguars Thursday is coming up. Tony Buscelli will be in Cincinnati for Thursday Night Football. He'll join us for the next hour. Also on Jaguars.com, the Jaguars app, Max Hockman, Hollywood at the controls there. Joe Fortunato at the controls on radio. The recent series history, the Titans and the Jaguars over the last 5 years or so have actually split the games, not year to year, but but last season split the games, the big blowout loss on Thursday Night Football, embarrassing for this Jags team. They come back in December, though.
That was an ugly game, by the way.
It was.
That was one of the ugliest games in Jaguars history.
They come back in December and knock the Titans out of the playoff race. So here we go again, Titans-Jags, just like the old days.
Yeah, just like the old days. But you know what? The Titans got some new toys. You know, we talked with Coach about Corey Davis, their first-round draft pick. I thought he was hands down the best draft best wide receiver in the draft. I don't think it was even close. I mean, this guy set all kinds of records at the FBS level. He's fantastic, folks. Watch number 84. He's fun to watch. Hopefully he won't be too much fun to watch. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Let's make sure the Jaguars are fun to watch instead. 1 o'clock kick Sunday. Logs, we'll see you then. For Max Hockman, Joe Fortunato, Jeff Loggeman, I'm J.P. Shadrick. Thanks to Doug Marone. This is the Doug Marone Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.